Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howell. You just met Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are up 7, Dow futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 44. We were way down yesterday and then came back. We were down 40 at the spools at one point, and then we did the turnaround. We only came back, we were down 17, so we didn't come all the way back, but we did come back. So, you always gotta come back, Matty. Buy the dip. What do you think? How's that for a strategy for years?
For such a simple strategy, you would think you would have made millions over the last 10 years.
I keep thinking if it's so plain that everybody can see it, then nobody can see it. How bad is that? Kevin, how are you?
Doing okay. I am the dip.
Oh. There was a guy. God, everybody always leads into a story. There was a guy on the trading floor who managed to pick that as his acronym.
Oh, no kidding.
Without any clue that, like, that's not a very good one. You know, it was like my buddy Scott Schramm who picked SCM. I don't think anybody knew who the guy's name was. Scott, he was scummy to everybody. So this guy was the dipster. How would you like being known as a dipster for the rest of your life? You just were.
Well, you could be the dip something or other.
The best was one of the guys I traded with in the OEX. He was a broker, real nice guy. His acronym was SAM, right? So I'm, 1 year, they put me in charge of the membership committee, which means people would apply to be committee members and you'd pick the people you wanted. So I picked my people, and all of a sudden, hey, what's the matter, Tom? How come you didn't pick me? Well, you got to apply. I did apply. I didn't see your name. What's your name? John Cibula. John? I've known you for 15 years. I thought you were Sam. How would I know you were John, for God's sake? Oh, man, I didn't. But I mean, that's what happens. What can I tell you? So, what's going on in Indiana?
What do you get? What do you get? Three letters?
If you were a big shot, if you were there early, there were two. The guys that came in, like, you know, 74 and 5 could have two. And after a while, two wasn't enough.
I think we have to make it the project for the next week that everybody on Stocks and Jocks needs to come up with their own three letter name.
Well, I was easy. I was TPH. Those are my initials. Most people, they use some derivative of their initials, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, I've done that in places where I use KO, which people think is somehow derivative of my initials, but in fact it's just homage to that wonderful chocolate water drink.
Oh, God. Well, it was a big deal at that time. Your acronym had to be, I'll use the term, vetted at every exchange. Because there was only one TPH at any commodity, any P-Coast, any place, anywhere. So if there was a trade, they knew it was me. I mean, there wasn't like a TPH on the New York Merck or anything like that. It was one in the whole system. That's why they had to go from two letters to three, because there weren't enough twos. So there's a history to everything.
Yeah, there's a a finite math class question. How many ways are there to select two letters from 26 uniquely?
It would be 26 times 26, right?
I don't know. Or is it 26 factorial? I don't remember the formula.
Well, that's be 26 times 25. No, it doesn't, because you could be KK. See, yep. Boy, I used to know this stuff. It's been a long time. Now,
so,
simple.
Yeah, so how many different ways can you combine? And I'm sure we have a listener who knows the formula and can go
You know who was really good at this stuff is your bro.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great at math. Probably still is.
Yeah. Well, how do you know? When's the last time you talked to him? Like yesterday? Do you think he can still add? I bet he can.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's got 10 toes, 10 fingers. He's pretty good for a while when he comes to addition.
Oh, God. For a while. I love that. Well, they had the Creatures and TV. Yes. Well, actually, they're not even in Congress anymore. They're doing this remote interviews of people like Ken Griffin and people like that about the Robin Hood situation. There's a couple of people that have some kind of an idea of what is going on in the system. But there's a couple of things that have changed since the big fork in the road, don't say take it, Yogi, and how business was done was when the CBOE was put together. It was designed with an awful lot of input from academia and those kinds of things. And the Board of Trade was always a very, shall we say, fair market type of a place, open outcry, an awful lot of traders. And the CBOE rules were put together, actually took the best of the New York Stock Exchange and the best of the Board of Trade and put them together. And the principles that they came up with to this day, I think, should rule the market. And they absolutely don't. And I almost felt like yesterday, if there's any way, I don't know if they want to listen to me, plus they probably have to go out and buy a suit. Any way they'd listen to me, I'd like to give a half-hour class to the congressmen that are actually trying to learn some of this stuff and say, just when this all changed. I won't say when awry. When it all changed. And there's a couple of principles that are in there that clearly are not there today. And these guys start talking about how, you know, the system, people generally get better prices, and how payment for order flow greases the wheels and blah, blah, blah. And it's just not true, Kevin. It just isn't true. Because two things entered the system. What the CBOE did is they had something called an order book, a limit order book. Now, everybody knows that there's a bunch of different kinds of orders, but basically there's limit orders and there's market orders. And a market order says, I'll buy IBM at the market. You just walk in and you buy it. Well, it's not a big problem in IBM because it's usually very narrow markets. And it's generally no big deal. Like generally with a capital G. I mean, other stocks or in fast markets or in the middle of the night or that kind of thing, a market order is basically a ticket to get hosed to a certain extent. But it also you can put in a limit order. And so say I'll go back to ACE because it's easier. If IBM is sitting there at 160 to an eighth, and you want to sell it at a half, well, a broker probably is not going to stand in front of the IBM pit, because they actually did a broker in front of IBM stock pit in New York Stock Exchange. It would go on a specialist book. Well, the CBOE had a limit order book as well. But once you put a customer order in a limit order book, that particular order had priority. So if the market in IBM, say, options on this particular one was 2 to an eighth and you were at 3/8, Kevin, the broker could put that in the book, your order, and they lined up, you know, first come, first serve. So if I decided that somebody was going to trade it at 3/8, the first trade at 3/8, had all the people in the book had to be satisfied. So I could not, if somebody came in and said 3/8 bid, if I said sold, I'd have to say, whoa, wait a minute, there's 10 in the book, you take those. I couldn't trade ahead of the book. So the customer got priority. Right now there's none of that. There is none of that. Right? So you take away something that customers had before. The other thing is, there's a concept, if you've never been a trader, you probably, I guess you guys, because you've heard me out peep too much, what does it mean when you say you lean on something, not a wall or a fence?
Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, if you know a broker's got, you know, 200 or something at 3/8, and or the book might have 400 at 3/8, it's just, you know, it's a tight market, locked market. You can sell a bunch at 2 5/16 and know, well, not always know, because somebody could come in and pay 3/8 ahead of you, but if you're quick like a bunny, most of the time, if you think you're wrong, you can turn around and buy them at 3/8 and you only lose 1/16, a teeny, as they say. So if I was a 10-lot trader, I could probably sell 30 of those things because I know I, my back's against the wall a little bit. Okay, so it's called leaning on an order. But nobody could cut the minimum bid and ask. So if the bid and ask was an eighth over a certain price, I think, boy, it's been a while. I think over $3 the minimum was an eighth, and below $3 it was a 16th. Okay, so if the thing is 3 to 1/8, and I see, you know, a bazillion of them in the book at 3 1/8, I couldn't say, I'll sell it to you, an eighth is 3.12, an eighth is 12.5 cents. I couldn't say, I'll sell it to you at 3.12. That way, if I feel I'm wrong and turn around and have to buy the customer order in there, then I only lose, what, a half a cent. So now, the people who do this payment for order flow stuff, like the Citadels and people of the world, they get to cut the market by less than the minimum. So when we put an order in, even at PTI, and we don't get paid for this stuff, if we put an order in at PTI to buy 100 shares of IBM, say for you, Kevin, and the stock is 121.10, say to 121.12 is the market, you're going to get filled at 121.11999. And which is bull bleep in my opinion. So you, the person who's sitting there offered at 12 at 0.12, he's not going to get filled, which he should be, because it should be the first price at 12 at 0.12.
First person that meets the price.
Right, but now that's why when you get Ken Griffin and he's whatever, I don't want to say in bed, when they say we better the market 90% of our trades, it's because they're leaning on somebody and they're bettering it by like a hundredth of a cent. Who cares? But what happens is now the Kevin O'Neills and Matt Webbers of the world are going to sit there and go, why should I have my order sitting there at 101.12 when the only time I'm not going to be first, the only time I'm going to get filled is if the market's really 14 and they blow through me like dinner through a goose. So what you do, it's not on that particular trade. On that particular trade, if the market is, you know, 121 to 121.10 or 121.02, and you get filled, you know, a hundredth of a cent quicker, by definition, yes, you bettered the market. But over a period of months or years, the market now, the whole market structure starts to degrade to where those bids and offers now become wider, right? So because why would you want to be offered there? You don't get priority. You don't get anything. All you do is get runs for once in a while. So there's been this huge degradation over time. And it just to sum my argument up, the guy who invented payment for order flow, you'll never guess.
Probably Bernie Madoff.
Bernie Madoff. Ding, ding, ding. So that's all you get.
The answer to everything that's gone bad.
Well, that was his first iteration. That's what he did in the Cincinnati Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So he was really good at dreaming up schemes.
But if you sit there and ask people questions for 4 hours and don't have a clue that is what has changed over the years, You're just wasting breath, I think.
Well, it's Congress.
But then they turn around and they say stuff like, you know, well, the thing of it is, Kevin, what ends up happening is your volume essentially goes up almost, I won't say exponentially, but it goes up a lot, because instead of the very simple transaction of you buying 100 shares of IBM and Matt Weber offering them at 12 cents and you buy them from Matt and then it's done, somebody jumps ahead by a hundredth of a cent. Okay, so there's a trade there. Then if that guy thinks he's wrong for a nanosecond, then he buys it from Matt. So there's two trades instead of one. So you double up on your volume. So some of the congressmen, and that, even though I would hate to see this, they're not all that stupid by saying if you put a tax in that's more than the hundredths of a cent, you might stop some of these guys from doing this, but you'll cause all kinds of other problems. You know, it's like stopping a plague with poison. Yeah, nobody has the plague anymore, but they're all dead, you know, type of thing. So, I mean, that, you know, Congress is not above, you know, just getting money for themselves as somewhat of a tent at a fix without realizing it's going to cause 90% other problems all over the place, right? So, I mean, anyway, so I'm off my soapbox, but is it, did I explain that in such a way where people have a clue what I'm talking about? Sort of.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like the kind of thing I need to listen to twice.
You also could use a blackboard, you know, toward here's what the market is. Here's now this guy gets to jump ahead. Somebody, wait a minute, I'm offered there. Why doesn't this trade there? When if the minimum is supposed to be a penny, how does somebody trade within the penny? Though, good question, right? How do you get to do that? We never could. In the OEX where I traded, the which I think was this, well, I don't know about some of the Board of Trade stuff, 60 to 66% in any given day of the trades were customer to customer. I'm going to say right now they're, if it's 1 in 50, I'd be stunned. That's a legitimate market, Kevin. When a market maker, a market maker's job is to take care of the momentary lapses in liquidity. Because it should be a customer-driven market. Market makers don't make prices. If there's a bunch of people that are bid at 2.25 and a bunch of other people offered at 2 7/16, my job is to be 5-teeny bid at 3/8 to make it, to narrow the market and be in the middle. And I mean, I'm there, but if custom orders come in the meantime, they should just meet in the middle. I shouldn't do anything, right? But that's not what's happening now. Somebody gets in the middle of every single trade. And there's like 17 exchanges, so you don't even know where the market is. They talk about short selling and how you should talk about the uptick. How the hell do you have an uptick when it's trading in 17 different places? I mean, they've absolutely destroyed the ability to do anything they want to do. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox. What about, I was surprised that, talk about page two. Boy, Rutgers got a couple of NBA guys on there, don't they? I watched them play.
Yeah, I haven't seen them play yet this year, but I know that their record is pretty good.
Well, they got a guard they claim is one of the best in the Big Ten. And then the center, he's like the guy in Illinois, isn't he, Manny?
Yeah, somehow they got a center out of the Los Angeles area to come across the country and go to Rutgers, which I don't know.
To Rutgers, to Jersey.
Right. I don't know how they did that, but I
think... Well, that would raise a red flag to me.
Yes, it does. And like Chief said, they have one really good guard, Geo Baker. And, you know, I watch Big Ten basketball pretty closely. So I've seen Rutgers, you know, 4 or 5 times this year. And they're really good. But, you know, in the Big Ten, they're 8-8. So, I mean, they're going to make the tournament. And they'll probably be like an 8 or a 9 seed. And they're going to be scary if you have to play them, because they're tough as hell. I mean, they guard you. And they're athletic. And they, you know, they're physical. And they're really good. But in the Big Ten, they're 8-8.
But how much, they were talking last night, the announcers that, they think Michigan's a 1, and these guys might be as high as a 7.
Yeah, I could see that. Michigan's a 1. I think Ohio State's a 1. I think Illinois is a 2. I think Iowa's a 2. And then you have like this tier, one tier down from those 4 teams. And you have, you know, Purdue, Wisconsin, Rutgers, Indiana, Minnesota, that are all going to be in that, you know, sort of 7 to 11 range in the seeding. And I wouldn't want to play them if I was...
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to play them at all because they could beat anybody.
What, just...
Well, I suspect that those players were bought and paid for by Rutgers' most famous alumnus.
Oh, God. Well,
who is their most famous...
Anybody know who that is?
Yeah,
who
is it?
I was
going
to say, who is it?
Mr. Magoo. You can look it up.
I wouldn't... God. Well, Thurston Howell went to what, Harvard?
Didn't like half of the CNBC folks and, you know, the big time traders, half of them go to Rutgers? I mean, isn't that a big New York school, even though it's New Jersey, but.
You wouldn't think it's like the New Jersey State School.
It is literally the New Jersey State School, yeah.
It is the University of New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, sports dudes more than me, the one kid they were talking about last night, I guess he's the guard, Manny. Said he was a serious 5-star recruit and that everybody wanted him. And like Merrill, you know, you name the team, Louisville, Kentucky, everybody wanted him, Duke. Now, when he decided to stay home, having one guy like that, you know, in the envelope, does something like that cause the guy from California to say, hey, these guys are doing something good, I want to go play with that guy? I mean, could it?
It's possible. I mean, it's definitely possible. You know, the Big Ten Network, which I don't know how, if you guys ever have, if you have that channel, if you watch that channel, but, they do a series every year during football season, and they do it again during basketball season called The Journey. And they do sort of a deep dive, and it's actually a really good production, whoever does it. It's really nice. And every week they sort of pick, you know, 3 teams, and they'll do a feature on, you know, a player from each of those 3 teams, and then the next week they do 3 different teams, and so eventually over the course of a season they cover every team and, you know, maybe 2 or 3 players from each team. And they actually covered that center from LA. That's how I knew he was from LA off the top of my head. And apparently his father is like some big time science guy, like scientist down in Los Angeles. And so his son wants to be a scientist of some kind, and I can't remember what the specific study that they're focusing on, but and I guess Rutgers has a really good science program. So he claims that he went to Rutgers because, you know, they recruited him really hard, and at the time UCLA wasn't very good, and you know, the local teams weren't very good. And they had a great science program, apparently, at Rutgers. And so when he went out there to visit, he was blown away by the science teacher and that program and so on. So
plus, it's the furthest he could possibly be away from his old man.
Right. So supposedly, there was no, you know, backhanded cash exchange. Now, do I think that, you know, it's impossible that there was a cash exchange? No, it's very possible.
Well, what is the state of recruiting? I mean, this year... Were there any football, basketball visits?
They've been doing them all virtually.
Yeah, that's right.
And they've set up virtual tours and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's all been virtual.
Wow, how do you show somebody the bars and the girls virtually?
Big recruiting advantage for a coach with a personality, huh?
Boy, pretty much.
Yeah, how does Patino get the strippers in there if? Yeah. If it's virtual, that'd be tough. I mean, you could still do it.
I can't believe that Adrian Dantley came to Notre Dame when he was his recruiting visit. They brought him to one of our parties with like 15 guys and 3 girls. He should have said that was it and went somewhere else. But he was I thought he was a football recruit. He, you know, he was built more like a football player. But he was a big kid. And he was very nice when he was in high school. I thought he was very. Did you talk to him, Kevin, when you were there that night and he came by?
I might not have been there yet. Well, let me think about that. No, I would have been there because he showed up when I was a sophomore.
Yeah, he was.
I might not have been able to see or speak a coherent sentence by that point in time.
Okay. Well, I think yeah, because he was a freshman when I was a senior, so it was one of our junior parties. And he came by and whatever. Somebody was, you know, here's a dorm life and. What, you guys getting trashed on a Saturday night? This is adorable. Okay, fine. I guess that was good. You must have liked that. But he was a, you know, I mean, he was highly recruited for football too, wasn't he?
Oh, I'm sure he was. The man was built like a tight end.
Yeah, I mean,
he had to
like
bend,
an uber tight end, you know, or an outside linebacker.
Was he like? I imagine, you know, how good he turned out. Obviously, had a great NBA career. Was he a highly touted recruit out of high school?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Or was
oh,
he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. Yes, he was. And he was also NCAA Player of the Year.
Well, I knew he was a great college player. I just didn't know if he was developed into that or if he was kind of expected to be that.
He came
now,
in.
Now, here's a really cool thing about Dantley. At the time, the four corners was in vogue. So there wasn't a shot clock. So when team would get a lead, and when they wanted to ice it, they would go to four corners. This was something that Dean Smith made popular at North Carolina, and it depended. What would happen is you'd give one guy the ball in the middle of the floor, and then the other four guys would each spread out to a corner.
Hence the name.
And in North Carolina's case, it was Phil Ford, who was an All-American guard, and that guy would drive, and if he got the chance to get to the basket, he could finish or get fouled. If he drew the defense, he'd just kick it to one of the corners, probably on the shooting, what we consider now the shooting corner, and then that guy would kick it back out to the far corner, and the guard would come back out and reset.
Start the whole thing over.
And
yeah.
So Adrian Dantley was a power forward. He ran the four corners for Notre Dame. He was an 80%+ free throw shooter. He was really tough taking the ball to the basket, and he could handle the ball.
But he was a...
That's a very modern type of player. If you can have a four that is a guard type, you know, level of ball handling and free throw shooting.
But he was...
Yeah, and he was that short power forward before Barkley was that short power forward.
He was barely taller than me. He might have been... Was he even 6'5"?
Yeah, they listed him at 6'5 all the time. He might have been 6'4".
But when he showed up as a freshman, he was... I mean, if you looked at him, he's just a big man. But he actually, for basketball, when he was playing football too, was probably, I'm going to say, 15 pounds overweight. And his freshman year, when they got to the tournament, he had a really bad game. And he said he just was, he thought he was too heavy. And that summer, he came back, I'm going to say, 220 maybe, 215. He was, I mean, all was, and he never looked back from then. But he was, when you get a guy that size, he looked like a boxer, for God's sake, when he came back. But, I mean, you get a guy who's a freshman or a sophomore in college who's pretty much ripped and he's 220. That's a big man. I mean, now everybody's 220, but they're big fatsoes. I mean, basically.
Do you guys know off the top of your head what year they instituted the shot clock? I mean, I can look it up.
It would have been well into the 80s.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Talk about a rule change that needed to happen and was for the betterment of the sport. And we talk about baseball being slow, and I still don't understand why they won't just put in a pitch clock and be done with it. Every other sport has a play clock, and it makes the sport move, and it's good for the game. Like, I mean, can you imagine if football didn't have a play clock? And yeah. You just run the game out. Or four corners in basketball? I mean, I can't even imagine that. That sounds awful.
You have to know that the Irish beat UCLA at home, and they were what? They were down 7 or 9 with 2 minutes to play or something incredible.
They were down 11. Notre Dame scored the last 12 points.
You know, yeah. So, but it was under 3 minutes, wasn't it? I think.
Yep.
So what'd they force, like 5 turnovers?
Turnovers?
Several turnovers. There was at least one offensive foul. And there was a travel, Tommy Curtis. I remember all this stuff because I watched that last 3 minutes several weeks ago. And Tommy Curtis, one of their guards, got a breakaway pass and traveled on it.
Back when they used to call traveling.
And then they missed a few shots because John Wooden did not want to run the four corners. He didn't want to stall. He thought, we'll beat them straight up.
Which he usually did, like 99% of the time.
And by the way, they still call travel in college.
In a while.
No, they call it like almost too much. I mean, they call it all the time. They don't call it in the NBA at all, but college they do.
What they don't, when I was there, my freshman year, we had a guy who was actually the big recruit, not Austin Carr, was a guy named Sid Catlett. And Sid was what, 6'9" or 10 or something?
He
was
something like that.
Big star out of one of the Eastern high schools. And Austin Carr was.
It was a DC. They had three DC guys. They had Carr. And they had Sid Catlett, and they had Collis Jones.
Well, didn't Austin Carr, for his entire career, high school, college, and pro, average like a point a minute or something bizarre like that?
Something like that. If you look up Austin Carr on Basketball Reference, he was an all-star player. He was the first player taken in the draft, and he was an all-star player. And then he had a serious knee injury, and when he came back, he never put up the same numbers because he couldn't play full time. It was sort of like when Gale Sayers came back.
Actually, Kevin, 1,000, I think he
1,000 yard year. He just wasn't the same guy though.
Actually, Kevin, I'm usually.
But if you go down in Basketball Reference and look at the per 36 minutes, you'll see that Carr's numbers never changed. Go ahead to break.
I think he was he broke his foot playing outdoor basketball in Washington in the off season. I don't think it was
I don't remember exactly what the injury was. I think it was knee. You know, Toby Knight was another Notre Dame guy who was averaging, you know, had a 19-point-a-game season until he was averaging 19 points for the Knicks. And then had a knee injury, only came back for one more year and couldn't log the minutes, and that was the end of a career. In those days, knee injuries were career-threatening.
Oh, absolutely.
By the way, the
surgery was more traumatic than the injury itself.
Yeah. By the way, you guys were right. The shot clock went into effect in 1985.
SP Futures up 17. Right, yep. NASDAQ Futures up 76. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just met over on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. Kevin, one of the ladies, I was going to see if Maddie could use his Iowa influence, a lady by the name of Cindy Axne, A-X-N-E, Iowa congresswoman that actually sounded like she knew what the hell she was talking about yesterday. I was going to see if we could get her as a guest, Maddie being the Iowa boy and so forth. Turns out she went to get her MBA from Northwestern. I wonder if she knows what she's talking about. Just saying.
Yeah, well, we'll have to root her out of Congress.
Yeah, we got to get rid of her if she knows too much. SP Futures up 14. Plus, she didn't look like she was crooked either. From Iowa, she probably hasn't gotten the check yet. NASDAQ Futures up 70. Dow Futures up 81. By the way, what did you think of your buddy resigning yesterday? Mike Madigan.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't see that. I was kind of out of the loop yesterday, so I had to go to a funeral. I was kind of out of touch all day. But
effective immediately.
He just finally gave up the ghost, huh?
Oh, well, he lost the speakership, so now he just said, I'm out. I'm not coming down here for nothing. So he's out.
Run things, I don't want to be here.
Well, I understand it.
Well, I could get that, I suppose.
DAX up 77.6%, FTSE up 6.1%, CAC up 37.7%. The backdrop to a lot of this is Janet Yellen talking yesterday at hours about how we need more stimulus.
I do like her line. Go ahead and finish the report, and we'll talk about that.
Nikkei down 218.7%, Shanghai up 20.6%, Hang Seng up 49.2%, Bonds 131 up another 2 basis points. The Bund minus 0.32 up a basis point. Japan, there it is, Kevin, 0.10. Wow. We never thought we'd see that. Oil down $1.10 under 60, 59.42. Brent down 81 cents, 63.12. Natural gas up a penny, 309. RBOB unchanged at 180. Gold is getting whacked all over the place because of the interest rates going up. Gold is an odd thing. Interest rates go up, you have to pay to store gold, so it reacts negatively to interest rates, but then if inflation drives interest rates up, then gold goes right with it. So it's kind of an odd thing. So it's down 390, 1771. Silver up 2 cents, 2710. Copper up 8 cents, 390. Copper's going to go through $4 here. That's insane, but it's going to. Oh, and I got a new crypto. Bitcoin up 650 to 50,671. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. For once all week, Chief, we're actually pretty quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No crazy weather to speak of. No accidents or pileups or delays or snowplow removals. Nothing like that. So we're off to a good start. If you're coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, Eisenhower, Stevenson, still looking good. Same for the Southside expressways. So enjoy a nice, quiet commute if you're coming into downtown. Off the expressways, a couple of accidents to report. Route 83 at Midway Drive, there is a crash near Midway Airport. No surprise there. In the western suburbs, Glen Ellen Road at Fullerton, there is an accident. And then down south, it looks like there's a level one hazmat situation, 72nd Street at South University Avenue. Don't have any details here. It just says that the area has been secured and there's crews on the scene, but that has 72nd Street closed at South University Avenue. So we'll have to see what that's all about. But everything else quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be cold, as it has been, but we'll have some sunshine today. No expectation for any snow today, although we might get a couple more inches over the weekend. But sunshine today and a high of 21 with wind chills in the teens. Right now it's clear and 13 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, a quiet night last night. The Bulls were off. They're back in action tonight looking to win their third straight as they're suddenly in the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference. They're at the 76ers tonight, who are very good, number one in the East. That's a 6:30 Chicago time tip-off. Blackhawks were off as well. They're back in action tonight at the Hurricanes. That's a 6 p.m. local time puck drop. Coyotes did play last night. They lost to the Kings 3-2. Chief.
I'd love to have this lady on to talk about yesterday.
Pretty good away from the Bulls there. They're like only two or three games out of the fourth slot.
Yeah, I know. It's they're on the outside looking in, yet they're like a good week away from being the four seed.
Have you ever watched a team that you can't? I can't even tell by. They got the one guy who's real good. The rest of the team, there's always different guys playing. Are they all equal? Is there even a starting lineup that anybody cares about? It's like there's the one guy who always plays, the guy who shoots all the time. What was his name?
Zach LaVine. Who I think will be an all-star this year.
Right, he's good. But the other people, it's like nine people that are interchangeable. I mean, some nights a guy plays 40 minutes or 30 minutes, the next night he doesn't play at all. I mean, it doesn't even matter who they're there. They all seem like they're all the same
kind of
player.
Well, I don't know if that's entirely true. I've watched the Bulls a lot lately, and the younger guys are in the starting lineup, and then they have a group of veterans, and they're good ball players. And they have this group of veterans who comes off the bench, and they'll mix and match a little bit. But these guys are the good influences on the younger guys that are showing them how to play, but they're also the steady guys when they need somebody in there who isn't as streaky as, say, a Kobe White or a Patrick Williams can be. And by the way, I think, you know, White's having a good second season. He's, you know, he only played 1 year in college. And Patrick Williams, I like him a lot.
I do too.
The youngest player in the league right now.
But you'll see a bunch of other guys like that. I mean, there's five or six different names.
Yeah, you get your Thaddeus Youngs and Sottos and guys like that and they're good, solid players. And you can always use those guys. And so, and yeah, I think Donovan is smart in how he uses them because, you know, he doesn't want to let games just slip away, giving the, younger guys' experience. He wants to give them the experience. They're in the starting lineup. They play a lot of minutes, but you know when it's on the line, you know you'll see who's on the court. And sometimes it's a mix of the younger and the older.
Yeah, Kevin's breakdown's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
He's going to start the young guys, give them every opportunity to play. You know, 30-35 minutes, but like they were against Detroit, they played terribly, most of them, and they fell behind by 25, and then Donovan said, I'm going to ride my veterans. And he even started his veterans in the third quarter and benched a couple young guys to kind of send a message. And that's another element of this team is they're finally being coached, it seems like, for the first time since Thibodeau was there.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, and that's been a joy to watch.
Well, and what I like about that approach is, I've seen where people say, well, we'll let the young guys take their lumps. I think that losing can become a really bad habit. And so, you know, you want these guys to get the experience, but you want them to get the experience and walk off the court with a win, too.
Well, sometimes at that level of ball, the difference between, even in softball, losing every night by two runs or winning by two runs, is a lot of that's mental.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're good enough to be pretty darn close. I mean, once in a while you should go over the top, right?
Yeah, another factor is Markkanen has been out with a shoulder injury, and so that's, you know, a guy that would play 35 minutes that is not there, so they're having to plug him in or plug in backups there. And I really like Markkanen. I think he's bounced back this year after really struggling under Boylan, but I can't blame him for that. He seems to have a resurgence this year under Donovan, and it's too bad that he got hurt because I think he was putting together a pretty good season.
Well, center's pretty good, too, and he just got off injury.
They just got back their center from Duke, too.
Yeah, Wendell Carter Jr.
Well, thank you, Wendell Carter, yep.
He's pretty good. He plays pretty well.
He's solid, yeah. He's a solid rebounder and defender, and, you know, if you get him the ball in the post, he can score. He hasn't really developed, you know, the 15-foot jump shot yet, and that'll be the next thing that hopefully he can. But I think he's a solid player. I think, like Kevin said, Coby White has been really good in stretches, and then he struggled in stretches, but he's like 20 years old.
Yeah.
And Patrick Williams looks like he might be the real deal as a two-way player, which is so valuable in the league.
Well, the one kid's the youngest player in the NBA, right?
Yeah, Williams is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Bulls, you know, famously, it's become almost a cliche because you hear broadcasters say it all the time now, but the Bulls actually have a younger starting lineup than Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin does. So the Bulls are very young.
Wow. So, hey, I'm reading this lady from Iowa's biography. I tell you what, despite wanting to talk about the stuff with the market that they were talking about yesterday, she spent 10 years at the Tribune Company from 2005 to 2014. Wouldn't you love to have her on here for a half hour and talk about her opinion of Sam Zell and what he did at the Tribune? I'll bet she would open some ears. I mean, seriously, because I don't know how that guy's not whatever. But now they're getting bought. They're going to be getting bought by somebody else, right?
Yeah, and you're talking about Cindy Axne,
yeah,
AXNE, who was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
That's where I bought my truck.
Yeah, and she went to the University of Iowa for her undergrad, and then went to Northwestern for her MBA, and now she's. An American businesswoman serving as the U.S. representative from Iowa's 3rd Congressional District.
So she was born out of state and went for Iowa. She sounds like your whiff. And look how good... tell you what, we've met how many of Jill's friends, and every one of them, there isn't not a spectacular person among them.
Well, Jill, you know, grew up in the western suburbs, and it was very common. I mean, she basically put it was impossible to get into Illinois.
Right.
She wanted to go to U of I and couldn't get in, and she was like an A student. But you have to be either, you know, valedictorian of your high school, or you have to be, you know, a minority has an advantage, or from out of the country, or some sort of, you know, crazy agricultural, not crazy, I don't even know why I said crazy, but some sort of agricultural, you know, person or whatever.
Well, she could have got the ag school easy.
Yeah, but she's not an ag person.
Obviously.
So the Western...
No, that used to be a pathway, though. There were, in at least when I was in high school, they talked a lot about go to ag school for a year and then transfer to their business school.
No, I don't think you can.
So, yeah. I
think they probably put an end to that.
That would be a good strategy. Yeah, they may have put an end to that. But I just know that in the western suburbs where Jill grew up, and she grew up in Bartlett, but, you know, the St. Charles, Naperville, you know, Aurora, Elgin, that area, all those guys, people are going to Iowa because Iowa's like, hell yeah, we'll take the out-of-state tuition and you can get in here.
My brother went to, my younger brother went to Iowa, my sister-in-law. His wife went to Iowa, and interestingly, they didn't meet at Iowa. And Jill, you know, John's been gone for 20 years, but Jill's, you know, she's just brilliant. I never asked her if she wanted to go someplace else. Why she chose Iowa?
I have a, I don't know. It's not a dirty laundry question, Manny, but I've met Jill's parents. Very nice, very bright. When did, I won't say if ever, because I'm sure they did, her dad's no dummy, when did they get the idea that the reason why Jill and all these other people couldn't get into Illinois because they wanted people from the outside to pay more money, and when or if did they get pissed off about it?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. Her parents both went to Eastern Illinois, and that's actually where they met.
Charleston?
In Charleston, yeah. Her mom is actually from Charleston because her parents were professors at the university there.
I went down there and lectured on options one night there.
Yeah, and her dad's from Chicago Heights, and he went down there because a lot of South Suburbs people go to Eastern Illinois.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they didn't have any ties to U of I, so I don't know if there was any sort of resentment, but I think that they were probably pissed off when their daughter was a straight-A student and couldn't get into the state university.
Well, one thing about Eastern Illinois, this is a long time ago when I went down and did one of the guys at CBOE. At that time, it was like 4 girls to every guy. So I can see why her dad went there. Place, I never saw anything like it, man. He was like, oh,
well, from the south suburbs, it's not that bad of a drive.
It's a ways.
It's a ways, but it's, if you leave from the south suburbs, you're there in 2 hours. I mean,
no, it's a solid hour and a half past Champaign.
No, it's not. It's an hour past Champaign.
Okay.
And if you hop on 57 and you live right off 57, you can get there in, like I said, just over 2 hours. I mean, going 75 the whole way without stopping. Now, if you're coming from the city and you're dealing with traffic and it takes an hour to get out of the city, then you're looking at three and a half hours.
Well, the guy I went with was, shall we say, younger than me. So we drive down in our limousine. Dr. J and my limousine, right? So we get there, and this guy goes, hey, this limousine looks pretty dirty for a couple of guys supposed to know something. So he gets the guy from the motel and says, hey, we got to shower up. We got to go lecture. How about taking our car? We'll give you $20 to get the car washed. So the guy comes back. The limousine's still dripping with water. So we go lecture, and, of course, we go out to the bar. And all these young ladies come with, and somehow we make it back. They were not interested in me. I was too old even then. Well, of course, we get back, and Danny's got the phone number. Some of the girls somehow managed to get her phone number on his pillow. I don't know if she called the hotel or something and said, hey, how about opening up room 9 and putting a phone number in? they were resourceful, I'll say that for her. At least she was. But anyway, it was a nice trip. People were very nice. Teachers were terrific. I mean, teachers we met, they loved it. They were trying to teach finance and options, and they thought we were great. Come down and actually talk about what it's like to be on a floor and everything. And it was a lot of fun.
A Google search right now says, you know, if you go the speed limit, it's 2 hours and 30 minutes from Chicago Heights to Charleston, Illinois. So if you go...
Chicago Heights is 50 minutes from downtown, 45.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, that's what I was saying. If you're in the south suburbs, it's a couple hours. Now, if you go 10 or 15 over, like everyone does, you're there in 2 hours.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And so that's good if you want to be away from home, but you want to be able to go home for a weekend easily, you can do it. Or if you, even a day trip is a reasonable option, you know, so mom or dad's birthday or something like that, you go home, you have dinner, you come back, you're home by midnight.
The limousine had a 425 4 barrel.
Home by midnight and ready to go out with everybody else.
Yes. Remember those days when you'd actually go out at 11 instead of like packing it in at 11, Kevin? It was like
who packs it in at 11? I'm talking 9:30.
I used to watch the first half of Monday Night Football with my stepfather, and he'd get tired and I'd go out. Now I fall asleep before halftime. Yeah, but anyway, so Janet Yellen yesterday was talking about the inflation stuff. And, you know, Kevin, you and I have talked around it. Manny and I have talked on the way in. You always, things always get in trouble when you let stuff lag. You know, if you don't fix your heater, you can guarantee, is it Murphy's Law that this is going to be like the coldest winter? You know, I think what the Fed has done in the last year, even though I'm probably the most vocal critic that I know of, wouldn't be so bad if they didn't spend the last 12 years before it pumping money into the system for a non-existent problem. We should have just taken whatever the hit was after 2007 and 8 and not had this constant pile in there to run their asset prices up. Who's ever behind that? There's a man behind the curtain somewhere. Somebody owns a lot of stock or whatever. If this would just happened out of the blue and things would have been, quote, normal, and we would have decided, okay, this year, because of COVID and people not working, we got to do something with the money. We got to just give people dough. I honestly think, Kevin, there's probably some chance we still get away with it, but there probably would have been a pretty good chance we'd have gotten away with it, but not on top of the 12 years or the 20 years where the medical stuff and the college tuition and everything else, you're already lying about it. You're already saying it's up 0.5% or 50% in 20 years when it's really 300%. When you get yourself caught with your underwear down basically like that, and then you have a real problem like now, it intensifies. It's like it's squared or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the problem is that is less so that we want to do all of this spending right now, in money creation right now because of the circumstance. The problem is that we've been so irresponsible all along that we can't afford to do what we need to do now. If you really believe we need to do it, we need to be able to afford it, and there is no preparation for the rainy day here.
Well, Dr. J and I remember this conversation. We're driving in. We used to drive in together all the time before he got to be such a big shot at CNBC, and John's done well. We're still good friends. And we drive in one day, and he goes, you know, everything could, he goes, the state is, we still have a deficit. And I said, John, just think about that. I said, we have a deficit. This has to be 1989 or something. And I don't know who was even governor, but I said, it's never going to, Clinton was in office. So it was those years when they were running the surpluses, which Carl denies. And anyway, they were pretty close to a surplus in Washington. I said, John, it's never going to get any better than this. The unemployment rate is whatever. Everybody seems to be doing okay. We're doing good. If you want a job, we get somebody a job in a minute on the trading floor. It's never going to get any better than this. And these idiots still have a deficit. What are they going to do? This year, there should be a 5%, 4% surplus. Because literally, you couldn't draw a blackboard any better than this. And sure enough, you know, it hasn't stayed like that since then, the mid-90s or whatever it was. And now look at it. Now they're hopelessly in debt. Instead of not putting money into the pensions those years and giving people more raises, what possessed people to do that, Kevin? I mean, how do we now look at the trick bag they have us in? And we're talking, you know, 2 and 3 years tax receipts behind in the pension or some massive number. How do you even?
Yeah, it's incredible. And Yellen's comment yesterday. Excuse me. her comment yesterday was that the cost of doing too little is greater than the cost of going big. That was exactly how she worded it, the cost of doing the big bill. Did she leave something out there?
Cost to whom?
Well, I'm just saying the cost in general. Let's just say she left out is that the cost of doing too much.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, if
you know, of overdoing it as if we haven't already, but the cost of overdoing it is probably worse than the cost of doing too little, and certainly worse than whatever she's thinking it is.
I'm going to say that the cost she didn't address, and to a certain extent, you haven't addressed, but that's not a shot. What I'm saying is somebody who happens to have his money something, you know, whatever, Bitcoin right now, you know, some dot bomb company or whatever, some company that's tripled in the last year, and somehow they got themselves in there, and all of a sudden they make, you know, $2 million, okay, or some number. And all of a sudden the price of the omelets is now not $12 or $13, it's $16. That guy doesn't give a rat's behind. Right, and there's people you're jamming so much money into some people's hands because it's uneven. Yet the person who is not getting a raise because there's no infrastructure for it at all, how the hell is a 20% inflation or 12% is going to land on somebody who the median income is $33,000 20 years ago and it's $37,000 now? How do you drop a 10% inflation on that guy for 3 or 4 years in a row? You don't. I remember this vividly because at Pullman, the guys who were the union guys got the COLA, and I didn't. I was a guy that I got the long dance from the guy, my boss saying, "You're one of our best employees. We hired you. Blah blah blah. You're doing stuff that we never dreamed you could do. Everybody likes you at the plant. Blah blah blah. By the way, you're going to get the highest raise we're going to give any of the whatever you want to call them, non-exempt or exempt, whatever the hell I was, you're getting 5%. And I go, inflation last year was 10. Thanks for nothing. I mean, it was uneven then. It's uneven now. I mean, if you decided, like Yellen, if you decided to give everybody walks in with their Washington and walk out with a Jefferson, a $2 bill, if you did it to everybody, okay, you wouldn't do any harm or any good, would you? Because what difference does it make? Everybody
right,
would just...
You just change the value of the... You change the numerical value of the currency.
Yeah, whatever. Stock price, it's 50, it'd be 100. If I owed Maddie $20, I now owe him 40. That type of thing. But that's not what they're doing.
It'd be like a stock split. It's just a dollar split.
That's exactly right. But that's not what they're doing. It never works out that way. And that's the problem, because Janet and the rest of these people do not get out of the limousine. They only see the people they see. in my opinion. And it doesn't make them bad people. It just means you stop seeing them. You know, all of a sudden, Maddie Weber and I, instead of going for a beer at the Tripoli, we're at God knows where. We're at some hotel where the martinis are $40 or something. It's not like we don't like the people, that we just don't see them anymore, and we don't hear their pain. Am I wrong, Maddie, or not? It's not that we hate them. It's not like we don't like them. We don't play softball anymore. We're playing polo. Can you imagine me playing polo?
No. I can't imagine me playing polo.
I can't imagine the poor horse.
No, I can't either. Well, that's why you have a string of Peloponnese and not one, right? Anyway, how often do you change your horse? I've never even been to one of those things.
I don't know. Wouldn't have a clue.
Now, Sino Manny would know that. He can be one of these 1%er kind of guys.
No.
I can see you out there stamping.
If I'm a 1%er, I can tell you I'm still not playing polo.
Well,
I'm playing golf and I'm getting good at it, which I've been trying to do for the last 5 years, and it hasn't really worked.
What are you going to do if I come out of retirement this year and maybe go a couple rounds with you?
I'd love to.
I'd be lousy, but still.
Well, you'd fit right in.
God, all right. Well, yeah, I hear your bro is wild. Now, we can't bring Thomas. It's too bad.
Well, Thomas is he's so bad, it's almost hard to play with. And I appreciate that he comes out, but he's so bad, I've never seen anyone as bad.
Plus, he has no golf course etiquette whatsoever. He hits another guy's ball and doesn't even think it's a problem.
Right, and I've tried to teach him golf course etiquette, and his whole thing is like, yeah, who cares? I suck anyway. And it's like, no, I get that. But still, there's a certain way you have to do things out here.
You walk to your ball, look.
I always wanted to get good enough so that people could enjoy playing with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? I never had time to practice, so I kind of set it aside. Because that is the only way you get any good, is you have to practice. You can't just go out and play.
But you get your etiquette
to the range, you have to go to the, you know, get on the putting greens, you have to do all that stuff.
Well, if you caddied, you have the etiquette. You know how to find the ball, look at your yardage, see what you're going to do, not hit it at somebody else, you know, type of thing. I mean, even if you're lousy, you at least can hack fast.
Well, I told this story. We have to wrap it up here. But I told this story when it happened a couple months ago. But I played in a scramble with Thomas, and it was one of those where you had to use everyone's drive at least once every 9 holes. And so we're in the 18th hole, and you know, we haven't used Thomas's drive yet on the back nine. And it's a par 3, but it's a long par 3. It's like 200 and like...
It's like the worst hole to leave somebody's drive to.
I know. And so we're like, you know, basically, Thomas, we got to use your drive. You know, we've been dying to use it for the last 9 holes, and you haven't hit the ball 20 yards, you know? So sure enough, you know, I grab a 5-iron, and I hit it right, you know, so I'm like off the green, but I'm at least...
What'd you even hit for?
I'm at least up there. Well, just because I wanted to, because it was a fun hole. And, you know, my brother hits and one other guy hits, and just because we wanted to. And then Thomas goes up there and we're like, well, we got to use his shot. So we're bracing for out of bounds, like looking for the drop zone. He pulls out his driver, on a par 3 and hits a low, like worm burning line drive that hits the base of the hill. Crawls up the hill and then goes right on the green, like 6 feet from the hole. And we're like, wow, okay, here we go. And
yeah, of course, no style points in golf.
Yeah, and it was like the best shot of his life, and it was just the ugliest shot. Used the wrong club, and it worked. So,
well, I got to take a second.
I got to give him credit on that.
I got to take a second. You know, we used to do this Calcutta. The guys on the trading floor, it was pretty big money involved. I mean, the winners were, you know, 5-6 grand, and because you bet on the teams after they were picked. But nobody would cheat or anything. Well, then we had this massive controversy. They did the same thing. Somebody's D player needed a drive. Well, it's his long par 3 over, like, you know, total crap. Like, if you don't airball the green, you're in the sludge. So Mike Coyle says, well, this tee, because we're on the blue tees, is like 50 yards long. Just get out your putter and whack one to the front part of the tee, and we'll just take our 4. You know, somebody can put one out from there, and we might even make it. Well, then everybody finds out about it, and it wasn't prohibited by the rules, but it was like just an equitable principle as a trade. And I'll tell you what, there was a lot of jaw slapping at the bar. And finally, it was they'd let it go, but you can never use a putter from the tee again.
Well, it wasn't defined in the rules.
No, but it became afterward. It was not right. You know, you didn't exactly break a trading rule, but it sure smelled. One of those kind of. But this guy was terrible, though. God, was he terrible. But anyway.
All right. You guys have a nice weekend.
You too. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 74. Come back with Mr. Carl Denninger. We're going to talk about these labor numbers. And a lot of what was talked about in Congress yesterday. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 15. Actually, make that 16. NASDAQ futures up 78. We're deciding we're going to go north here today. Not exactly sure why, but we are going north. We were down yesterday. Actually, we're up almost as much as we were down yesterday. We had 2 days in a row. We were down pretty heavy. The day before, we were down 20-some spoos, and we were actually 30, and we finished up or unchanged. Yesterday, we were down 40 and finished down 17. So the buy-the-dip strategy, which Carl's big on. He's bought the dip the last 2 days. He's a multimillionaire. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing all right.
How do you like that for a strategy? Just buy the dip. Not even, are we down? Well, then buy. It's like Gomez and Adam's family. Everybody's selling, then buy.
Well, how'd that work out for all those GameStop people?
You see, now if you listened to yesterday, you'd heard all about it, Congress.
Well, yeah, okay.
I don't know how people, and you know, It is incredible when you become a guy like Griffin. You actually think that you're helping people. It's like, I wish I was, you know, somehow or another I got to the point where if I was just screwing people right and left, that it gets to the point where I actually think I'm helping people. I mean, come on. I mean,
I think there's a little something else that of course nobody wants to have a conversation about, which is that perjury has become an art form instead of something you go to jail for.
Well, the one guy, they were all from home, right? The congressman and so forth. So they,
yeah.
So you can never, couldn't ever catch anybody's name. You know, it wasn't like they had the thing sitting in front of them in a seat. And this one guy kept asking the Robin Hood guy a question. The guy kept, well, you know, I'm not asking you, but to go down another road. Finally, he accused the guy. He goes, why don't you become a senator? You'd be a great filibuster guy. You don't say anything. He says to him. He goes, you'd be great in a filibuster. They don't answer any kind of question whatsoever. It kind of just goes on and on and on. And that's
even
why
when they were asked yes or no questions,
yeah,
they wouldn't answer.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's why I was this one lady that I was about Maddie to try and get from Iowa. Because she sounded so good, she's got to be the low end dog on the train, because she came up like last. So you know, if you're last to say something, you got to be like a rookie out there. I think she is a rookie.
Cindy Axney is, yeah, who Chief's talking about. She just got into office in 2019, so yeah, she's probably at the bottom.
Well, because the guy from Robin Hood says something about, well, you know, we're just the Citadel is, or whoever it was. It must have been the guy from Citadel. He goes, well, you know, we do like the best for our clients, or no, it was Robin Hood guy. And she goes, they're not your clients. He goes,
She goes, your client is Citadel. Your job is to deliver that guy trades so you can get paid for him. You know, your client's not paying you anything. Why do you care about them? You don't. She says something along those. And I'm sitting there going, duh, no kidding. I mean, she says, your customer is the person you're getting paid from. You're getting paid
well,
from
yeah.
Citadel. He goes, and nobody else. I mean, she goes, Citadel is your customer. These people you keep talking about as your customer, you don't care about them. Why would you? I got to have her on the show. Maybe I'll have her on with you, Carl. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's of course, that kind of stuff always gets buried in the court. You know, oh, well, we are Jesus.
Yeah.
Watch us walk on water in front of Congress. It's one of these things, you know, it's another dog and pony show. What else is new, right?
Well, the one guy even said it. He goes, this is all theater. The one representative.
Well, of course it is. Yeah. But that's what, to some extent, I think that we have done that to ourselves with, you know, there's a camera and a microphone in every hearing room and, you know, other than the classified stuff where they bolt the actual door. But short of that, there always is. And one of the things that happens, if you've watched these hearings before and you've watched enough of them, after a while you get this concept in your head that they're not actually asking questions. They're making campaign speeches.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so essentially the entire purpose of the so-called hearing is to make a campaign speech. And you just happen to have a prop and a chair out there that you're supposedly grilling.
Well, you know more about this than me, man. Our buddy Robert actually, when he was there 3 hours in front of Congress, it's on YouTube, and of course I was giving him no end of grief about his bereavement counselor suit he went out and bought. But when they say, well, we're reading this in the record, and Maxine Waters goes, okay, record of what? I mean, I'm sure the congressional record goes from here to the river, you know, in terms of, does anybody read any of that? When they say, well, we'll get to you later, I'll get that to you later, does anybody even do that, or is it all just BS?
Oh, no, it actually is there, but and where it becomes important, or at least it should become important, is when somebody turns around and sues and a case ends up going to the Supreme Court on whether or not something's constitutional, what did Congress intend, you know, what did they do, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that only matters nowadays if the politics of it are acceptable, because, for example, with the Affordable Care Act, when Obama passed that, there was a volume of debate and a bunch of these statements that were put into the record, okay, that never actually got any exposition in front of a camera where people saw it. Well, where it actually became important was when you had the states that sued and said the mandate is unconstitutional, and oh, by the way, the law's not severable.
What is
okay?
That?
Because the presumption is in the Supreme Court and in most courts, if you can save a statute by reading it a particular way, then you're required to do it. Right? You cannot just throw something out for grins. You have to be able to not get any other direction that gets there, okay? Well, normally you have this presumption of severability, even if it's not in the law. But in this case, the congressional record actually contained a speech where it was said that the entire scheme was dependent upon the law not being severable.
Okay. So what does that mean practically?
Congress explicitly repudiated one of the basics of statutory construction before the Supreme Court and said, no, we are doing this on purpose this way, and you cannot break it up. Well, of course, then what happens is Congress, you know, it goes to the court, and the court immediately does sever the Medicaid mandate, okay, which Congress has kept on telling them they can't do.
Well, whenever
then they turn around, they did it three or four more times. It used to be that this kind of stuff was dispositive when you got into litigation. Nowadays, it's whatever someone who's pulling a string says it needs to be.
Well, I would think that I can understand the theory. I mean, there have been some pretty bright people that wander through Washington every now and then. When you're changing a whole, I'll say, way of doing business, like in the medical thing, the Obamacare. I mean, the whole idea was, I mean, that's another one of the, I put it right up there with the money supply thing this year with the Texas fiasco going on. It's something had been allowed to degrade really for years and years and years, the medical system. And then they're going to try and fix it all in one day or 1 week or 1 year.
Well, it didn't degrade. It turned into a racket, and it still is.
Well, I was thinking not so much that side. I'm with you 100%. But what I got somewhat of an education, Carl, way back. One of Audrey's pals that she was in drum corps with. Anyway, we drive. The guy was in Rockford, and when the hubby. Well, they married here, but then he got this big job. It won't say one of the hospitals in Rockford, one of the biggest ones in the state. And I said, we have a couple of beers, and I go, hey, well, you know, how does all this money work? I'm always kind of, that's my personality. And he goes, oh, you wouldn't believe it. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, this has had to be 1990, maybe, Carl, 91, somewhere in there. And, he says, well, you hear about guys walking out of the place with the $100, box of Pampers, right? And I go, yeah. He goes, well, that happens. He goes, there's probably 20-25% of the people that come to our place, I won't give the name, and they have these Cadillac insurance policies. You just send them a bill and they pay. So you do whatever you can to get money from those guys. Then there's next group of insurance guys that have stepped out and said, look, we're only paying this for an appendectomy and that's it, or a baby and that's it. You can give us all the diapers you want, but we're not paying for them. And he says, no, we got some of that going on. He goes, that's what I got, another 30%. He goes, then there's the Medicare people, and they're very strong negotiators. He goes, then there's the Medicaid, which they give you a certain amount per day, whether you do brain surgery on the guy or whether he just sits there and has the flu. He goes, then there's people that show up that we have to essentially insure, and we can't turn anybody away. We have to treat them here, you know, and like some kind of welfare or whatever, because we don't really have a county hospital. And I said, okay, so people essentially are self-insuring or insuring other people in the hospital. So if you went in with a hip thing, you're paying the Cadillac stuff, you're paying three times as much as you need to cover the other people. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is no way to run a railroad. The people who show up at the place are sort of insuring each other in the place. I mean, so then Hillary felt there was a problem, okay. And I don't really remember what her plan was. I actually think, from what I do remember, I thought it was better than Obamacare. But then she gets basically laughed out of it. Bush ignored it for 8 years, and now comes Obama with now 16 more years of degradation from when I thought the thing was all screwed up to start with. So
right.
So now you've got this, because now there isn't an insurance company anywhere who's paying full bore. They're all negotiated. They all got their prices. So and hospitals still sort of have to, and I think Medicaid's starting to pay more. So some good stuff happens, some bad stuff. But the hospitals are in the middle of this mess of who they charge and what where. And I'm sitting there thinking, look, that insurance policy is not going to work. So it seemed to me that if you could find a way to get the people up top to pay a normal price, you know, and everybody got insured, if the people on the bottom start paying something, it actually could drop the prices of the people on top if you did it properly. But in order to do that, there's so many moving pieces. I can see where Congress would say it's either the whole bill or no bill, because you can't just take the savings piece out for the richer people and not have the other guys get covered. You know, I mean, it all either had to work together or it didn't, and I don't think it did. I don't think they did a good job on it. But the idea that something had to change from 1990, I believe that to my last day. But the idea that if we just would have no Obamacare, everything would have been okay. No, it was never okay. It has been okay for 30 years. I mean, I don't think.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that there's, you know, when you look at the changes that have come along, and it's been incremental, but these guys have very good lobbyists, and, you know, there you have it, right? I mean, that's, but you look at the scams that come out of this, all the way to the hospitals that feed the, you know, because I mean, let's face it, the hospitals get fed by the universities, right? I mean, that's where the doctors come from. And so you look at the, I don't know if you saw the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Very interesting piece from a professor at Johns Hopkins about this whole COVID thing. And he has come to the same conclusion I came to, that essentially from a herd immunity standpoint, we're there. And oh, by the way, he was told to shut up. So, and he's not the only one who believes this within there. Some of his colleagues that he's talked to, he says, yeah, they agree with me. They looked at the math, and the math says the same thing to them, says to me. And he's been told to shut up because we can't take the fear away from people, or they won't do what we want them to do.
Right, absolutely. But you know,
okay, and so essentially, the truth doesn't matter anymore. There's money to be made. There's politics to be had. And oh, by the way, go stay in your house and wear a tarred rag on your face and be scared.
Well, I think though when you look at one criticism that I have of the numbers that sometimes you send, I agree with them. And as a country, we're reaching a herd immunity, but there are places in the country. I mean, you could be, just pick a name out of your hat. You could be in Houghton, Michigan. And they're not at herd immunity. I mean,
this is always true. Okay,
yeah.
And, you know, in 1918, you had the same thing happen. All right, the different parts of the country, you know, got to suppression before others because that's just kind of the way these things work, right? But what gets me and what angers me beyond words is that we have known since spring and summer, specifically, we knew conclusively by the time we got into June, July, and August, how to stop pretty much everybody from dying of this thing.
Right.
Now, there's always going to be the exception. But by the time we got to the, you know, and yeah, okay, last March, other than not letting employees of nursing homes go anywhere but a hotel that we rented for them or sticking RVs in the parking lot so that you don't let the bug into those places, we really didn't have any defense for highly vulnerable people because we didn't understand what was going on.
Right.
We didn't do that anywhere. There's not one state in the union where we told all the people who work there, you're not moonlighting, you're not working in the hospital, you're not working anywhere else. By the way, we rented this hotel down the street. That's where you're going to stay. And they say, well, you know, blank you, I'm quitting. Okay, fine. How much money does it take for you not to do that?
we're not saying it's a bad hotel, but we're giving you quarters for the massage machine.
Well, and not only, but you know, here's the other thing too. You know, your food's paid for, your lodging's paid for, your internet's paid for. You're
right.
Just going to sit there for the next 3 or 4 months when you're not working, and then you know you're going to work here.
Right.
And oh, by the way, whatever you're getting paid, we're doubling it. All right, for the next 4 months. By the time we got to the summer, we knew how to stop people from getting killed by this bug. There would have been, you know, whoever got it and got laid waste by early. Okay, that's you know, there's nothing we could do there. We would have had 15,000 people from August to today that had died.
Yeah, you're still going to get
not,
that.
Not 350,000. 15,000.
No, you're still going to get your person had the genetic diabetes or things like that. That's one of my buddies died from it.
Well, you're going to get something that's,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, look, nothing works for everybody, okay? I don't care what disease you have. I don't care what condition you have. Nothing works for everyone. We know that. That's medicine. But the reality of it is that we knew how to stop this, and we didn't do it, and we're still not doing it. And now we have this idea that the answer is a jab in the arm, okay? And for some people, maybe it is. For some people, it's not. But you know what? If you do that, you're the beta tester because we did not put the time and effort in to know.
No, and boy, people are all over this, making people get them and all kind of. Anybody who's got one, I've talked to. Not anybody, but an awful lot of people have said, well, no, you shouldn't be able to do anything. And matter of fact, one of my buddies from school, I was having this little debate with yesterday, and I said, if you've got yours,
why do you care if I have mine?
Yeah, why do you care if somebody else has theirs? I mean, if you're protected, what's the point? Well, they can give it to somebody else, but not you. So, as long as, I guess, you know, you kind of want people to have their measles vaccine and so forth, but then again, I had the measles, and I'm here. So, I mean, I don't know if I'd want them as an adult. It's got to be worse if you're an adult, right? Measles, I would think, but I'm not sure.
Not really. The thing is measles is such a different. People try to use that as a comparison, but it's not because I mean, I can look at you and you'll get the measles.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in terms of transmissibility, there's never been anything found that's worse.
The average person who has the measles, Carl, I'll hit you with a statistic. Maybe you don't know which is rare for me. The average person who has measles infects 15 other people.
Yeah, who said the R naught's 12?
Really? Okay, because they had a test somewhere in a subway car, and I don't know if it was a CTA car or a New York car, and somebody walked in there with the measles and walked out, and something like 15 hours later, you could still walk in there and get it. It's totally airborne.
That's the thing. It's ridiculously transmissible beyond reason.
Way more than smallpox. Way more than anything. Way more than this. I mean, way more than this. Not even.
Well, it's five times as transmissible as this thing. It's unbelievable. And I mean, you know, but that's just the way it is. this particular bug, though, when you get down to it, it's turning into an endemic virus. It's always going to be with us. There is some evidence that there's the so-called Russian flu from the late 1800s, which, by the way, set off a series of really bad economic dislocations in this country and was part of them, all the way back to the Great Crash, the Long Depression, 1873. That appears, from the evidence, to have been a coronavirus.
Really?
Yeah, and it's probably one of the four that causes colds and flus now in people, and we don't think of as being very important because you get the sniffles. And yet, when it first showed up, it whacked people like crazy. And the reason that scientists believe that that was probably one of those is that a lot of the symptomology that was reported in people that died, because, of course, they don't have any tissue samples from, you know, the late 1800s, right? Nobody's kept them frozen and stuff. But a lot of the symptomology matches the kind of systemic damage that COVID has done to people.
You can't, this is a really stupid question, but I don't know the answer. If somebody is croaked in the grave, if you exhume the body, you can't tell if the virus isn't still there, right?
No, and that's part of the thing is that you'd have to have some samples. One of the things that is kind of interesting is that we have been able to do that with some of the people that got whacked by the flu in 1918, okay, the flu pandemic. And what they found is that almost all the people who it killed were actually killed by secondary bacterial infections and not influenza, which means that all the tard rags that they had, because, you know, we're doing the same thing with mask mandates and stuff like that, that those actually were probably the cause of the majority of the deaths.
Well, I was reading stuff on that because when it happened, and I knew you were coming on the show a couple times, I at least like to read up something, so I know something of what people are talking about. And they were saying that they started in the summertime, they moved the hospitals essentially outside, and when they put people in the sunshine,
right,
that I got to believe that it was killing bacteria and the clothes and stuff, and it was nowhere near as sterile as it should be, and just being in the sun helped out some.
Oh, no. Actually, what we found is that vitamin D levels, virtually everybody who has been killed by this virus has been severely vitamin D deficient.
Right.
Putting people out in the sun, of course, solved that problem,
but
right?
But it doesn't mean, the weird part is, if something attacks somebody, and basically there's a connection between they happen to be vitamin D deficient, it doesn't mean that if you start taking 50 times a day, your daily dose of vitamin, it just means don't be deficient.
Well, that's true, because actually excessive vitamin D is very dangerous. But here's another interesting thing. There's a pilot study that was reported out in the summer, and now there's a larger one out of Barcelona that just reported out, that testing for and correcting that at hospital admission, if in fact you were deficient, cut the fatality rate by 60%.
Well.
Hey, and you're talking about something that costs pennies.
Hey, speaking of exhuming bodies for conspiracies, we were last, was it 2 weeks ago? Was it the 62nd anniversary of the Day the Music Died? Buddy Holly's crash?
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize there was a big conspiracy on that. Of course, whenever you start reading about anything, you find out something. That months later, I think it were weeks or months later, the farmer's cleaning up around the area, and he digs up a gun that was owned by Buddy Holly, and it had two bullets had been discharged. And one of the...
So the theory here is that someone shot the pilot.
Well, there's no theory. They're just, that's what the conspiracy theory is all
right,
about.
Right, right. But I'm saying there seems to be some rounds missing. Right.
Well, plus, the big bopper was ejected from the plane. So then the other one was he was alive for a while. Right, so...
Yeah.
So he was buried somewhere in Texas. That's where he's from. And they were going to move his body to some place where, you know, rock and roll stars are or something. So when they're going to move the body, the kid calls some doctor and he says, by the way, my dad's body's being moved. Would you mind doing an autopsy? Making sure he wasn't shot. Well, they're convinced that the pilot didn't know what he was doing. It was one of those fog, snow. They said he just drove right into the ground. Which he would have done if he was shot too, right? So, the guy does, and he says, they get the doctor on there, and he says, well, you know, I didn't want to, because it was one of the most preserved bodies I've ever seen, right, for that age. And he says, I don't want to open the guy's dad up right in front of him, so I decided to do you can do a full X-ray autopsy. I never heard of that, but essentially you can take X-rays of like every you know couple inches all the way down the guy.
And, well, you can CT the guy, I guess.
Yeah. So he goes. There was no bullets, no nothing. So there was all that stuff, and then they said, "Well, could he have survived a while?" And the guy goes, "He had at least 200 bone fractures from the from the impact. He was virtually every." He goes, "That guy didn't last.
He virtually broke everything." Yeah.
He said his jaw, his skull, his teeth. I mean, you name it, fingers, toes, virtually every bone in his body was broken from the impact. That's how hard they hit the ground. And he goes,
wow.
He goes, there's no way that guy was living for any length of time, whether he got tossed out of the plane or not. So I'm sitting there going, God, the stuff you can find out on the internet, Carl, you know, just saying.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that one. So,
but I mean, now we're right back to where did the two gun bullets go?
Well, yeah, exactly.
I could see you taking a loaded gun on a plane with three other rock and roll people, you know. You're thinking, well, you know, why would you think you might need that?
Well, yeah, there are some questions there, right?
So, hey, we come back. We're going to break here in a second. I want to talk a little bit more about this. I mean, the state of. I mean, I'm trying to tie all these things together, Carl. The state of the Texas grid system, the state of the budget in Illinois, the state of the money supply, and even now. The state of the markets. I mean, in my opinion, we've let the markets degrade with three or four people. I mean, everybody should just shiver when a guy like Griffin gets up there and says, we're 40% of all the business. Or 50.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
I mean, but nobody seems to think like that anymore. Why is that? Let's talk about that after the break. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 85. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Webber on the board. S&P futures up 18 now, and NASDAQ futures up 86. So we got a pretty good rally going. It's actually a little higher than we were down yesterday after the big, kind of really, really bad day we have most of the day. We've got we got John Deere's earnings last night, up 16 bucks, trading 317. Stocks are all, I dig through these earnings every day because I like doing earnings plays for my people. Every one of these stocks, 200, 300, 400 hours. They're all double from where they were. A lot of them, not the ones that you look at in the Dow's and things like that. Apple's not double, but a lot of these stocks are just plain double. They're all over the place, and you wonder their earnings can't be that much better. But they that's where they are. Dow's up 85 bucks, 0.3%. The over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 105 now, and it's 0.8%. FTSE up 10.2%. CAC around up 41.7%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 218.7. Shanghai up 20.6%, Hang Seng up 49.1%. Just as a way of review of yesterday, which we're already kind of past, Dow was down 119, S&P down 17, NASDAQ down 100, which means we're right about there again today. Bonds up two more basis points, 131. Bond up two basis points to minus 0.32. I still don't know who the hell is investing money over there, negative interest. That's crazy. Japan has made it, 0.10. I never thought I'd see that within the next, this year for sure. And the 10-year at the UK is 0.67, up 4 basis points. The interest rates are just rocketing up here. Anybody who thinks they aren't, I don't know what you're looking at. Oil down 117, that's first down move in oil we've seen in a while. 59.35. Brent down 91 cents, 63.01. Natural gas up a penny, 3.09. RBOB, up a penny to 180. We've got gold down 440, 17.70, right down the very bottom of the range here. Now, whether it goes through the range or not, or it starts to go back up, we will see. Silver up 17 cents, 27.25. Copper up 9 cents, 3.99. We're going to ask Carl in a minute, did he ever dream copper was going to be $4? But it got down to, like, I'm going to say 248, 258 within the last year. Just horrible number. Platinum up 8, 1283. Manny, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have one crash in the area affecting our expressways. That's on the Kennedy on the outbound side just before Addison that is blocking the left lane. So some traffic building there. Nothing major, but downtown to Montrose is up to 14 minutes. To O'Hare, it's 25 minutes. So that'll continue to grow until they get that off of the expressway there. Apparently it was a car versus a wall situation. We typically think the wall wins those altercations. But that's blocking the left lane on the Kennedy just before Addison on the outbound side. No issues on the inbound side. Edens looks good as well. Eisenhower traffic starting to build, but no significant delays. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways have looked good all morning, so that's good news. One issue adjacent to a Southside expressway, I-57 on the outbound side at Burr Oak Avenue, the exit is blocked. That's the Burr Oak 127th Street exit on I-57 southbound. There's a stalled semi that's blocking the exit ramp there. So you'll have to navigate around that if that's your exit or take the exit after. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but still very cold, well below normal as we have been for the last few weeks. Sunshine with a high of just 21, wind chills in the teens. Right now it is crystal clear and 14 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, quiet night last night. Bulls and Blackhawks are both off, but they're both back in action tonight. The Bulls are at Philadelphia to take on the 76ers. That's a 6:30 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. The Blackhawks are in Charlotte. They're taking on the Carolina Hurricanes at 6 p.m. Chicago time. That's the puck drop there. Both teams are playing well, so worth watching tonight. The Coyotes were in action. They lost to the Kings 3-2. Chief.
Matty, why don't you, since you know all these sport kind of guys, why aren't they both playing on the same night and then there's an off night? I'd like to watch them both, and I can't go from channel to channel.
Well, the only
what was it, last or Wednesday night, they both played at the same time.
Yeah.
Which that isn't great either, because you know, you can kind of go back and forth, which is nice, but you miss one or the other. And then last night, they're both off at the same time, and then tonight, same thing. They both played at the same time. It would be nice to space it out a little bit.
I would say so. All right, Carl, man who knows everything. I'm sitting here supposed to be knowing all this stuff, and I gave a number on copper. I said it was, you know, maybe 240 a year ago. Let me know, what was the bottom tick on copper, and when did it happen?
1.975 was the bottom tick. It was an intraday, and it was March of last year.
I got a 223, so you must have had a different future.
March 19th. I'm looking at the futures. I'm not looking at the cash market.
Well, that's what I am. I'm looking at whatever. It was, let's say 210, so it's up. Whatever, it's damn near doubled.
Well, it's a double. It's a double. And here's the interesting thing about it is that, you know, that was, of course, the dark depths of, you know, 15 days to slow the spread, right?
Yeah.
When that, I mean, that was right in the middle of that. 319 is the day I have as the bottom tick. But if you look at what's happened over the last 2 weeks or so, just since the start of February, so you can't tie this to Biden's inauguration because that was in January.
Right.
But just in the last 2 weeks, it's been a straight, I mean, there's not a red bar to be seen anywhere.
No, and interesting, and if you wanted to have a spectacular year last year without, you could play all these stocks that I never heard of, which I know sounds bad for a guy who does it for a living, but they've shot up so fast that some of the guys that I do business with, Carl, are saying they're in so many stocks for like $5 and they're trading 80 or 100. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
There's two stocks here that I look at a lot. One is GOLD, which is used to be Barrick Gold. What is Barrick Gold?
Right.
It used to have a different symbol. And the other one is FCX, which is Freeport MacMarin. And those guys were always a copper company, and then they bought a gold company. So I think they're, what, 30, 40% gold? Maybe not that much. Since November, they've doubled, and Barrick Gold is down 50%.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Freeport is, I mean, good Lord, from a year ago, let's say they were trading under $5.
Yeah,
and now they're trading, you know, 34.
Yeah, all you got to do is buy yourself 10,000 shares of that for 40 grand, and now where are you?
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. You know, more than $250,000. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff like that that's going on. But, you know, you brought up one of the things just before we went to break, which is the whole situation with Texas and, you know, the energy situation, things like this. There's a piece of this that nobody's talking about. And I don't know if they ever will, but we'd better pay attention to it. So natural gas, of course, fires a lot of our power plants. Okay, it doesn't just heat your house. It also makes the electricity that makes everything else work.
Right.
And these guys over the space, and this is not just market forces. This has been government mandates that have done this. They've taken a lot of the self-powered, because if you think about it, natural gas, great energy source, right? It happens to be right there in the pipe. It's at the wellhead. It's in the pipe. So all the pumps and the dryers that get the moisture out of the gas that comes out of the well, all this stuff used to be self-powered. So as long as the pipe was intact from one end to the other, you had the power to move the gas from one end to the other end of the pipe. Okay, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
Well, EPA comes along, everybody else comes along, and you can see some position papers from the EPA, if you dig back into this. Some of them go back early, middle 2000s. Some of them issued during Obama's time in office, some other. And basically, the entire point of their push is, get those engine-powered things out of there and make them electric. So you just took the failure domain that used to be limited to the fence around the pumping station or the wellhead or whatever have you. Okay, so you got compressor stations on the pipe. And you extended that failure domain out 100 miles to wherever the closest power generation source is. And if anything in the middle breaks, you get no gas.
All right, so wait a minute. They used to have generators that were powered by the gas itself in the pipe, correct?
Well, it's not just generators, but pumps, mechanical
right.
pumps, because you have to compress the gas as, you know, the pipe has friction, right?
Right.
So every so many miles, you have to have a compressor station that moves the gas along the pipe.
A pump, essentially a pump.
It's a pump.
Yeah,
it's a pump. Okay.
And you also have to have a separator, because the gas that comes out of the well is very dirty. You have to get the stuff that isn't gas out of there, or it will corrode the living bejesus out of the inside of everything else.
Right.
And that requires energy, too. Well, you happen to have a very convenient source of energy right there, right? It happens to be a really good source of energy, too. So you bleed a little bit of this off, you regulate it down, and you use that as the power to drive a turbine or drive a piston engine, okay? It's very basic stuff. You also happen to have a lot of heat from that because, you know, engines produce a lot of waste heat that you got to get rid of. So if it's a little too cold, you got to stop it from freezing, whatever. You got all of this. It's all in one place. You change that out for electrically driven devices, and what you've done is taken the failure domain and extended it all the way back to wherever that energy comes from.
Exactly.
Now, the problem with this is, now, of course, you know, they say, oh, well, but this is greener. Well, no, it's not, but think about the tail-eating problem. You want the gas to make electricity to drive the thing that makes the gas move from one end to the other. And under stress, what happens is the monster eats its own tail, and you get nothing.
People do not. I don't understand how. I don't know, Carl. When I was young, I say I worked at Pullman. I was like an absolute mental. You know, I was like a trap. These guys that were in their 50s at the time, that had been engineers, all you had to do was sit these guys down over a cup of coffee or a beer. I could drive one of these dudes to Seattle. They'd all worked on helicopters, they'd worked on this, they'd worked on that, and there was an amazing discipline to everything they did. And they all took notes on everything, and we got to figure out, okay, what do we need, what are we trying to accomplish? Let's define our environment. Let's figure out what's the worst that could go bad in the environment, and do we want to account for it 90% of the time, 100% of the time? There always were factors in there. I mean, in Chicago, do you gear up for 3 2-foot snowstorms in a wintertime? No, you don't. It's a waste of money. Okay.
Right.
You know, so what do you do? So at some point now, the people in Texas have to ask themselves, if you could possibly stop just bleeding back and forth to each other, you got to ask yourself, is this still a 110-year storm, or is it going to happen every 25 years? And by the way, did we design it properly? And like I was talking yesterday, the day before, my mentor Kevin, I said, has it been allowed to degrade? I went to some long dissertation yesterday about how the Commonwealth Edison system in Chicago, even though they keep raising rates to tell you all what they'd be going to do for you, they haven't done it. Everybody
right.
knows that the system here is no longer anywhere near design spec because people have generators on the roofs when they never needed them, those kinds of things. And now all of a sudden, and they raise the rates so they can have new transformers on every pole. Yet my guy who works for electric company says, I see some on the south side that say 1906 on them. So they just haven't done it. So now is the design of the Texas grid horrible? Have people allowed it to degrade? By the way, did they get paid to keep it up and they didn't keep it up? Are we gonna put those people in? I mean, there's a million questions here that all these guys that I used to know could sit in a room and they could, in a 4-week span, could give you your report. That would be honest, but we don't want an honest report. Do
well,
we?
No, you're not going to get an honest one. But the other thing is that part of the way this was sold to people is that things that are fuel driven require maintenance staff, all right, and that costs money. It's less efficient in some cases if you generate there than if you generate the energy somewhere else. So it costs, so basically we get the bean counters in here and we say, okay, you know, I can take two guys that used to have to do the turbine maintenance on this plant, and they used to have to sit there, monitor this, and babysit, make sure everything's okay. And I can get rid of them because now I got an electric motor, and electric motors just work, right? And if it breaks, well, we got another one. But we've got that. And so you got that, and then on top of that, we can put the green fig leaf over our head and wave it. And oh, look, you know, we're so energy efficient because we're getting our power to run this thing from windmills. Right up until they freeze.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, you go down the line and you look at all of this. The thing is, when these systems were put together, and it's not just in Texas, because remember, these gas pipes cross state boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
all right, so they're all over the place. But the thing is, when we built these things originally, the first and foremost requirement is the effing thing has to work. Okay.
Well, you know, when you do that,
everything else comes after that.
Carl, when you do that kind of stuff, one of the guys, when I went to Pullman, there were two guys that had been there ahead of me. Well, one of them, really. He was the analyst, and, of course, we get bring in with his MBA status, so he didn't like us right out of the gate. Well, it turns out we ended up becoming really good friends, and he's a character. But he was a basketball reporter for Taylor Bell, Matt. He'd go to a high school game every Friday and Saturday, and he was one of the stringers. He'd call in the game and interview somebody and whatever. Real good. We're friends to this day. And so we used to get these, what do they call them, Carl, because you ran a company, where you do an analysis to whether you should make it in-house or whether you should farm it out, right?
Oh, yeah, sourcing analysis. Yeah, so, we used to do them all the time.
So Bob says to me, he starts writing it up, and I said, well, what do you think's going to happen? He goes, well, it's going to be better here. And I said, well, you haven't even started it yet. He goes, I know that, but they want to make it here.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the problem is that it's political, okay? And then you think about this. What happens when you want to build another one of these pumping stations or increase its capacity because you want to put more gas down the pipe, right?
Yep.
So you're going to have more compressors. And you go and you get the permits for that. And the permitting guy says, you can't put an engine over there.
Right. Oh, yeah.
All right. That has to be electrically powered. And by the way, there's a 4160 volt line that's sitting right outside the place, so there's no problem with you getting the electricity.
Well,
but
whenever you do something like that, Carl, I mean, again, this is back to my old grumpy engineer days from those guys. I wasn't one, but they would always tell you if you change something like that, you need to go back and review the whole system because all of a sudden now there's always a what they used to call it, you know the term. The first place it's liable to break, it's the fatigue.
Well, critical path analysis. Yeah.
They'll say, all you did was just change the fatigue spot. You know, and now we have to redo the thing to see, now what is the backup on the electricity? If there's no backup on the electricity, what have you just done? You've taken the whole, by the way, this is I don't want to say too much of this because I'm trying to be a family show here, but Kevin sends me this thing yesterday. Maddie's going to have to send this out, I think, but it is an absolute riot. San Francisco Department of Public Health guidance tip sheet for safer sex during the COVID-19 pandemic. we actually had somebody. I'll just go a couple pieces here. this is what we know about how sex can spread COVID-19. Some ways you might be able to reduce your risk. Some ways to navigate the challenges of sex during the COVID pandemic. Now, Maddie, this is for a guy like you, because that's how you ended up with your current wife, because Wes, guess what? She looked good, right? That's what started the whole thing out, right?
Doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt. Looking good. just like with other diseases, you can't tell what's up just by looking at someone, no matter how fine they look.
No, really?
People who feel fine can still spread COVID-19. They may never have symptoms, or they may be spreading the virus and get symptoms in a couple more days. Even if you or your partners don't feel sick or have mild symptoms, you may unintentionally transmit the virus to others. Then they got all kinds of on navigating the landscape of love. This is a good one here. Hot and heavy breathing. COVID-19.
Yeah, that never happens when you sleep with somebody.
COVID-19 is spread when we breathe out, and is especially spread when a person coughs, sneezes, or even when they sing. Increased breathing, like with panting, groaning, moaning, or shouting. what it says here, if you're going to have sex, you got to ask her. If you're a moaner, I'm out. I'm out of the kitchen.
Oh, geez.
Increases when we exhale. It also is believed to increase the risk of spreading COVID. I can't believe we paid somebody to write this. Then it's, get a load of this. Now, what they're recommending you to do is to watch porn and not have sex. Maybe you'd like to watch. The virus can spread to people who are within 6 feet of a person with COVID-19. The virus collects and concentrates indoors, so if six feet may not be enough distance, particularly in poorly ventilated indoor location, like maybe a bedroom. Keeping your distance is an important way to reduce risk. Learn more, and then they go down how quicker is better, because if you don't spend that much time with the person, you're less likely to pass it.
That depends who you ask.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying, if you're talking about COVID, and then you probably shouldn't be indoors. And it,
okay, so voyeurism is now right in.
And here's a good one. More people, more risk. So if you're having sex with more than one person, you know, have more risk. Do you think we're stupid enough that somebody has to tell us that?
This kind of stuff never ceases to amaze me. And then we wonder why the lights don't work in Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's this kind of stuff
where did the good Lord? I mean, I'm not surprised that, you know, that something like this comes out. But
here's one. It gets less family oriented as we go here. But make sure you clean your sex toys, sheets, rings, masks, collars, and other items.
Collars, okay.
I didn't know you had to clean the collar. For God's sake. I thought when they said to clean the collar, I was thinking maybe for Venkman. I never would think like you and Jill would have one, maybe.
No.
Lord.
The timing of wiping down and cleaning objects is important, too. Be sure to clean them after they touch one body before they touch another. We paid somebody to do this? How long do you think somebody spent on this?
Whatever they were paid, it was more than they were worth.
It's 6 pages long, and it's a big, you know, big, huge page.
Yeah. What else is new?
Yeah, it's
this is the kind of craziness, you know. It's like you look at the stuff with the markets, you look at what's going on in D.C., you look at, you know, at the economy generally, you look at the employment data, and the claims data.
So they have this blue to red thing here, showing which is the most dangerous versus the least dangerous.
Yeah,
you got to believe this. The most dangerous: sex with more people, less distance, more time indoors, in small and or poorly ventilated places. Close sharing of breath, lips, mouth, eyes, unprotected, whatever, I'm running into that, and all objects shared without wiping down. Now, the least dangerous is virtual sex, masturbation, sex talk, porn while alone, or with someone in your household. Do somebody, good Lord, we got too many people hired in San Francisco.
Well, you know, all I got to say is this. There was an old joke when I was running my internet company. That there was really only one reason for the internet.
Well, yeah.
Okay. And then essentially 90% of the people that were signed on at you know, 9:30 at night, guess what they were doing?
Well, how long before WhiteHouse.com wasn't a porn site?
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Anyway, so Carl, good question. Let's get back to other stuff that our government officials do. How do you restart a grid that's torn up in 50 different spots?
Well, there's all sorts of balance issues with regards to AC. A lot of people don't understand how alternating current works on transmission system. The wire actually has resistance, but it has resistance to AC current flow. And when it gets long enough, that resistance goes up. So when you go to pick load up, you're actually trying to essentially shove against the phase, the current that's going up and down, okay? That's how you pick load up and drive current into the system. But if you get far enough out of balance, it becomes unstable, and that's what ends up segregating everything, because there's protection equipment in there that if you were to allow that to continue, it would destroy things, like really badly. So once it trips offline, the problem you have is that a lot of the big plants, the big coal-fired plants, and especially nuclear, cannot black start. They cannot come up without utility power because they need more energy than they can draw from their on-site generators in order to come up and actually operate.
It's like a starter on a
car. Plant, the big problem is you got a big auger that takes the coal out of the pile and divides it into dust and then sprays it into the actual combustion area. And the amount of energy required to run that thing, for a nuclear plant, it's the pumps, the circulation pumps and such. And so what you start with is natural gas plants and hydro. If you've got hydro doesn't require any outside power to work. But natural gas essentially can start off of what amounts to batteries and a small on-site generator. And then once you get running, now you've got energy on the grid, and that can be used to start the other stuff. All right? So you pick the pieces up that way. But you have to pay attention how much energy you have available to deliver to customers and how much your customers want. And when you go turn everybody back on and it's, you know, 5 below 0, well, guess what? Everybody's heating system comes on immediately, right?
Right. Well, I know that when in our building, when I lived at 70 West Huron, and it wasn't the 25-story apartment building. I mean, engineer and I became pretty good buddies. And he said, when I turn the air on, it's a, you know, I got to talk to Commonwealth Edison. When it goes on, it's not, we suck so much power for the first, you know, minute and a half that if we just did it without telling them, it's a problem.
Well, that's part of the thing is that large motors, so like the big, you know,
you probably see your lights flicker slightly when your AC unit or if you have a heat pump, your heat comes on. The large motors can take 10 times the current required to start as it does when they're running. So if you take these large loads and you dump them on the system all once, it'll immediately trip it back off. So you have to bring it up in a phased kind of a manner. And for very large customers, like big industrial loads and stuff, yeah, it's like, hey, buddy, go shut all that stuff off. And then once your lights are back on, you know, bring stuff back on slowly, one at a time.
Well, yeah, I would like to see. Other than the detail in this sex piece, I haven't seen that kind of detail anywhere in terms of the COVID. I sure haven't seen it in terms of now. At the end of the day, are we going to get people in Texas going to get some kind of a iteration? It was 20%, 30%. Just we never had a storm like this and didn't really plan for it, which I can understand. It's 30%. The grid doesn't look anything like what it was designed for 20 years ago, and these five people have let it degrade, and by the way, they're all in jail. Are we getting any kind of a report like that? I think the answer is no.
No, you're not. And part of this is that this was an extremely unusual event, okay? But remember that what we've been told for the last 20, 30 years is we're dumping all this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You're going to boil in the middle of February. It's going to be 95 degrees down there in February, yeah. Okay? Well, guess what? It wasn't 95 degrees.
It was minus whatever.
It was minus 10.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and the thing is that because of that, you've also got a building code problem down there because now you've got all kinds of water damage from split pipes because these clowns ran feed lines into people's homes that are not below grade and they froze.
Yep.
Then you have other ones where they've got water piping inside the houses that are running on exterior walls with garbage for insulation. And you shouldn't be running in the exterior walls to begin with. They froze and split. So now when the heat comes back on, the ice thaws, and now you got 20,000 gallons of water in your house.
There's got to be people. We got a dash card. There's got to be people in rural Mississippi and Oklahoma and Texas that have no idea. I mean, they're not even on their foot and horseback. They don't even have heaters.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kyle, thank you very much. Talk to you next week, buddy. SP Futures now up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 92. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.